Valdi from Italy. And first of all, I want to apologize for our terrible pronunciation, but hey, we are Italian. Serious. I hope you will understand our words. So, the talk is about men in the middle attacks, and we'll see what they are, obviously. How an attacker can achieve them, and how to exploit the situation once in the middle, and last but not least, how to prevent them. Is table of context. We have outlined three types of scenarios. One totally in the local area network, and we will see R poisoning, DNS spoofing, STP mining, and posting. For what concern traffic from local to remote through a gateway, possible attack are R poisoning and DNS spoofing again. DHCP spoofing, ICMP redirect, IRDP spoofing, mining. The last scenario is traffic totally remote, and we'll see DNS poisoning, traffic tunneling, and root mining. Let's start from the end. So, once the attacker has gained the middle, what he can do? The first type of attack, obviously, is sniffing. Since all the packets goes through the attacker, he can easily watch them. So, all the plaintext protocols, such as Telnet, FTP, HTTP, are compromised, and the attacker can sniff username, passwords, and so on. Another easy attack, easy to launch, is hijacking. Since he can sniff the packet, he can look at the sequence number of TCP connections, so it isn't blind, and he can hijack one side or both sides of the communication. He can also inject packets into an already established connection, but this is only possible in a full duplex attack. Full duplex means that the attacker controls both sides of the communication, since sequence number has to be adjusted in two ways. Adjusting the sequence number, the attacker can keep the connection synchronized. If the attack is in the form of a proxy attack, it is even easier, because we have two separate connections, one from the victim to the attacker, and one to the, from the attacker to the other victim. So the attacker can easily write into the socket and don't have to mess with the TCP sequence number. Also, the payload of the packet can be modified by the attacker, and before forwarding the packet, obviously, it has he or she has to recalculate the checksum. So, the attacker can create a filter on the fly on the, while the communication goes on. Even the length of the payload can be modified, but only if we are in full duplex mode, as seen for injecting, because TCP IP sequence has to be adjusted. Let's see some attacks examples. The first is a common injection, and it is useful where an authentication schema uses a one-time password, for example, RSA token. In such scenarios, if the attacker sniffs the password, it is useless, because he cannot reuse the password later. But hijacking an already established connection is crucial, because the attacker can inject command to the server or emulate fake replies to the client. Second type of attack, we can inject malicious code into web pages or mail while the victim is browsing the net, inserting JavaScript, Trojans, virus, etc. And either binary file can be modified during the download phase. And the attacker obviously must know exactly what the executable is, because the virus or the backdoor code has to be placed in the right position. suffered connection, such as SSH1, which exchanges the public key of the server on the net, can be cracked. And let's see, the client starts the communication, and the server replies with its public key, RSA public key. The man in the middle can intercept this key and replace with its own public key, and forward its key to the client. The client calculates the session key that will be used by a symmetric algorithm such as Thread-S for the encryption of the packet, and encrypt this session key with the public key of the man in the middle. Obviously, the man in the middle can decrypt this packet. So he can extract the session key and re-encrypt the session key with the real public key of the server. At this point, the server and the client, but also the man in the middle, know the session key. So all the messages exchanged on the net can be deciphered by the man in the middle.
Since the attacker cannot since the attacker can change packets payload, he can modify even parameters exchanged by client and server during the negotiation phase of the communication, altering their behavior. Let's see some examples. For example, SSH protocol. First packet sent during an SSH connection is a string announcing server version. If the string is in the form ssh1.99, it means that the server supports both SSH version 1 and SSH version 2. If the string is like ssh1.51, for example, it means that the servers only support version 1 of the protocol. The attacker can easily make a filter to replace the string 1.99 with the string 1.51. At this point, the client will think that the server only supports version 1 of the protocol. This is useful for two reasons. The first reason is because we can perform previously seen attack, decrypting the whole connection. Second reason is because we have the possibility under some circumstance to circumvent non-host restriction. For example, OpenSSH has two files called non-host and non-host2. These two files contains the public key of the server contacted at least once. If the user used to connect to the server simply typing on the command line SSH IP address of the server, the client will use the better protocol version available. So the client will use SSH version 2 of the protocol. If the downgrade attack is successful, the client will connect for the first time using SSH version 1. So the client has no stored key to match with and has to accept the fake public key provided by the man in the middle. And the user will not be prompted with the alerting banner, someone is dropping you, but will pop up only the simple string, the key is not present, do you want to add it? The user is happy to add, to type yes and add the key, and the man in the middle is happy to decrypt the whole connection. Let's see how man in the middle attacks can be used against IPsec. IPsec uses port 500 UDP to exchange key material and negotiate cipher suites before the beginning of each communication. The man in the middle can drop every packet sent to this port, so each endpoint of the communication will think that the other endpoint cannot start an IPsec connection. If the client is configured in rollback mode because the user is lazy or the administrator is lazy, there is a good chance that the client will start a clear text connection and the user will be not notified of this situation. This is not an attack against the protocol itself, but it relies on a client misconfiguration, typically Windows clients. Let's see another protocol that is vulnerable to man-in-the-middle attacks. This is PPTP. PPTP is used to set up rudimentary VPN environments, but this is very vulnerable because it uses GRE as transport layer. GRE does not provide any encryption nor authentication of packets sent during negotiation phase. PPTP uses the same negotiation scheme as PPP. So it uses request packet, acknowledgement packet, and so on. The whole negotiation phase is not authenticated. Even MSChart version 2 mutual authentication can prevent this kind of MIM because the man in the middle is in the middle and can feed the server with correct data and can get from the server the correct authentication for the client. During negotiation phase, we can for some kind of parameters. We will see afterwards how we can do that. For example, we can force PAP authentication from a request of another kind of authentication scheme, but it almost fails in most cases because some clients are configured to send automatic way password hashes, for example, under Windows. We can force MSChart version 1 authentication scheme from a request of MSChart version 2 authentication scheme. Version 1 is easier to crack because it contains LAN manager hash that is weaker. We can also force no encryption, no compression data, and so on, depending on client and server configuration. We can also force tunnel renegotiation by sending a clear text terminate tag packet to one endpoint of the communication. Force renegotiation is useful for two reasons. First of all, we can retrieve password from existing tunnels where the authentication phase has already been done, or we can perform pre-existing attacks that are possible already during negotiation phase. We can also use password change feature. Password change is used by the server when client password is expired. So the server gives the client the possibility to change on the fly the password. Password obtained this way, spoofing a password change packet, are directly password hashes and are not in the form of challenge response. So those hashes can be used directly by a modified SMB or PPTP client to, for example, to enter the VPN or to mount a share, remote share. Hash retrieved from MSChart version 2 password change feature are unuseful because are ciphered each other, the old hash with the new and the new with the old. But as we have seen before, we can force version 1 of the protocol during negotiation phase. Let's see a simple scheme. In this scheme, we will force PAP authentication from a chat request. This is only an example because we can use this attack scheme to force any parameter, for example, no encryption, no compression, and so on. The client starts the tunnel request with the server. The server, for example, makes a request for an authentication scheme using JAP algorithm. The man in the middle can intercept this packet and replace this packet with a fake request requesting to the client an unknown authentication scheme. The client that does not support the fake authentication scheme will send an ACK, the server suggesting to use CHAP authentication scheme. The middle can modify even this packet, suggesting the server to use PAP. At this point, the server will believe that the client does not support CHAP authentication and that the client has suggested PAP authentication. If both server and client supports CHAP and PAP, the server will send a PAP
authentication request, and the client will acknowledge this request. This way, we don't have injected any packet in the communication, so we don't have to mess with GRE sequence number, and we can hang off the main, the middle status where we want, keeping the connection synchronized. Another protocol used to set up VPN environments, typically under Windows, is L2TP. L2TP is much stronger than PPTP because it can use IPsec ESP as transport layer that provides encryption and authentication for negotiation phase packets. Under stupid integrated Windows client, by default, L2TP is trying before PPTP. There are three configurations for lazy users. Do you want to use L2TP? Do you want to use PPTP? Do you want to don't mess about protocol? Do you want it to be automatic? Yes. So, blocking ISACAMP results, as we have seen before, in IPsec failure, and the whole L2TP protocol will fail. So, if the client is configured in automatic mode, there will be a protocol rollback, and the client will start a request for a PPTP tunnel. Now we can perform PPTP previous attacks, or we can emulate the PPTP server if the real server does not support this protocol. Two tools to perform this kind of attack are EtherCAP with the Hydra plugin suite or Angular.
We have seen what the attacker can do once in the middle. Now, let's see how to reach the middle, the interesting part. We'll start from the local scenarios. The first attack is a poisoning, and it relies on the statelessness of the protocol, and we all know how it works and what the problem are with the ARP request, ARP cache, and so on. Some operating systems do not update their entry in the ARP cache if they are not already in the cache, or if a request was not sent for the replies for the incoming replies. This can be fooled by the attacker by sending a spoofed ICMP packet to force the other host to make an ARP request, because if the ARP entry is not in the cache, he has to perform an ARP request. If the attacker sends immediately after the ICMP, the spoofed ICMP packet sent the fake ARP reply, this is the first ARP reply that the host receives, and he will accept it and put it in its cache. Against Linux, for example, we can use ARP request attack instead of ARP reply, classic ARP reply. ARP poisoning is useful to sniff on switched RAM, because the switch works at layer 2 and it is not aware of the poisoning process, because the attack is not against the switch, but it is against the ARP cache of the two victims. Obviously, if the switch performs some time of ARP inspection, it will detect. Some tools to perform ARP poisoning are EtherCAP or DSniff by Daxong. Countermeasures for this attack are passive or active monitoring of the net to detect a flip-flop of the association of IP address with the MAC address, but these only detect the attack, not avoid. We can avoid the attack using static ARP entries, but on large network, it is infeasible to put thousands of entries on each host, or use SecureARP. SecureARP is a prototypical protocol developed by me that uses public key authentication with a little certification authority in the LAN. Port security on the switch is ineffective, because if the attacker sends a packet with its real MAC address, the switcher will not complain for that. And the kernel patches such as anti-cap, anti-dote, middleware approach are also ineffective because we have developed for each one a specific attack that fools the patch. Second type of attack is DNS spoofing, and if the attacker can sniff the DNS request, we are on the LAN, so probably we are on an hub. If we are on a switch, we can use a poison, for example. So we can sniff the ID of the request, so the man in the middle can reply with the correct ID, and the host will accept the reply. So when the host makes the request to the DNS server, the man in the middle can reply before the real DNS, and when the second reply arrives, the host will drop it. Some tools for this kind of attack are EtherCAP, DSniff, or Zodiac. Countermeasures for this, detection of multiple replies, the use of LMHost or HostFile for static resolution of critical host, or the use of DNSSEC that solves every problem. Another attack is STP-mapping. STP is used is a protocol used to build the spanning tree for the switches to avoid the loop in the LAN. And this is not real man-in-the-middle attack, because the attacker will be able to receive only a copy of a managed traffic. To change this attack in a real man-in-the-middle attack, we have to use some kind of desynchronization technique. And the attacker will pretend to be the root of the spanning tree by sending BPDU with higher priority, easy to do. Tools for this attack is EtherCAP, Slania plugin. Countermeasures: disable STP on VLAN without loops, because it is not necessary to have a spanning tree. Or enable root guard or BPDU guard on switches that support this feature. Let's see the last attack for the local scenario. It's port stealing. The attacker sends many layer 2 packets to the switch with the source address equal to the victim host we want to steal the port, and destination address equal to its own MAC address, because we don't want this packet to be forwarded to all the other hosts. At this point, the switch, there is a rest condition between the attacker and the victim. But the attacker can win this race by flooding the LAN with packets. So the switches now associate the MAC address to the port of the attacker. So the port is stolen. At this point, nothing is new. It is a known technique. But how the attacker can now forward the traffic to the real victim? As the packet arrives to the attacker, he stops flooding the LAN and makes a broadcast up request. The victim will respond to the up request. So the switches associate with the MAC address of the victim, the real port of the victim. So the attacker now can forward the packet to the victim and restart the whole process for the next packet. So every packet will flood the LAN, wait for the packet, stop, make a dump request, waiting for the reply, send the packet, and restart. Tools for this attack is EtherCAP's confusion plugin. Countermeasures, obviously, port security is now effective because we have to spoof a MAC address. So port security on the switch solves the problem. And the use of static ARP entries is useless because this attack is not against the hosts, but against the switch. Let's see the second scenarios. where traffic is from local to remote. We can perform a DHCP spoofing attack because DHCP requests are made in broadcast, so all the hosts of the LAN will receive the request. If the attacker replies before the real DHCP server, he can manipulate the IP address of the victim, the gateway used, the DNS address, the WINS address, and so on, many other network parameters. Countermeasures, detection of multiple DHCP replies where it is supposed to be only one DHCP server. Another attack is ICMP redirect. The attacker can send a spoofed ICMP redirect pretending to be the real gateway. So if the host H sends a packet to the gateway to reach destination T, the attacker can spoof an ICMP redirect and the host will update its routing table to send a packet to the attacker. Obviously, ICMP packet must contain a part of the packet redirected, but some version of operating system don't check this part. Or if the attacker is able to sniff on the LAN, he can put the right part of the packet. Then the attacker will forward the traffic to the real gateway, and the destination T is reached. Some tools to perform this attack are IRPAS ICMP redirect by Phenolit or ICMP redir. Countermeasure, we can disable ICMP redirect to block this attack. And pay attention on secure redirect option on Linux because some kernel version seems to not block this type of attack.
Middle attacks is IRDP. IRDP is used by routing appliances to announce itself as routing appliance for the LAN. The attacker can easily forge fake advertisement pretending to be a new router for the LAN, and he can pay attention to set preference level and lifetime fields to high values to be sure that the host will choose him as the preferred router. The attacker can also improve this attack by sending spoofed ICMP host reachable packets pretending to be the real router. So the host will think that the old router is no longer available and will use the new advertised router. Quite easy to do, to perform this kind of attack is the same as before it passed by Fenery. Obviously, the valid countermeasure is to disable IRDP passing by the host if the operating system permits it. Let's see another kind of attack. This is root mangling. Let's spend 2 words about the scenario. We have the internet, the gateway, the host, and the attacker. The gateway, the host, and the attacker are in the same LAN. In this LAN, a dynamic routing protocol runs. The attacker can use this dynamic routing protocol to perform rough mangling attacks. The attacker can forge fake packets, fake dynamic routing protocol packets, destinated to the gateway, pretending to be a new router with a good metric for a specified host on the internet. If the dynamic routing protocol supports Netmask, the attacker has to pay attention to set a Netmask big enough to win against other routes, because the bigger is the netmask, the more specific is the route. So this is in most cases the first parameter that is looked up by router when selecting the best path. Now the big problem for the attacker is to send packets to the real destination, because the host will send the packet to the gateway will send the packet to the attacker. If the attacker tries to send packets for the destination through the gateway will send back the packets to the attacker, because the gateway will think that the best path to reach the destination goes to the attacker. To solve this problem, the attacker has to set up a tunnel to another environment, another appliance somewhere on the internet, for example using GRE protocol. The attacker will tunnelize each packet received into the tunnel to the AT2 appliance. The AT2 appliance will forward the packet to the destination by passing the gateway. It is probable that the gateway will send to the host SMP redirect packet announcing the new route to AT, but the host will not accept this packet, because if the host accepts SMP redirect packets, we can perform SMP redirection attack that is much simpler than this. Two tools to perform this kind of attack, depending on which dynamic routing protocol runs, are IRPAS and Nemesis. Obviously, valid countermeasures are to disable dynamic routing protocols in such a scenario because they are unuseful in a LAN, or enable some ACL on the router to block an expected update, or enable authentication on the protocols if the protocols support them. Let's see the last scenario, when the communication starts and ends totally remote. The first attack we will see is DNS poisoning. The goal of this kind of attack is to cache a fake entry on a remote DNS. This entry will have the attacker's IP address and well-known symbolic name, for example www.mail.com and so on. There are two ways to perform this kind of attack. First way, the attacker sends a request to the victim DNS asking for one host he wants to impersonate. The attacker can spoof the reply, which is expected to come from the real authority DNS for the domain. But the spoofed reply must contain the correct transaction ID, because the transaction ID is used to match the correct reply with the correct request. To guess the correct ID, we can use a brute force technique, sending a large amount of packets, or we can use a semi-blind guessing. To use semi-blind guessing, we have to have the control over another DNS on the internet. Before performing the attack, the attacker can send a request to the victim DNS asking for one host in the attacker's domain. When the attacker receives the request coming from the victim DNS, he can look up to the transaction ID in the request. If the ID generation scheme is incremental or predictable, the attacker can perform the attack and has a good chance to hit the correct ID, sending a small amount of packets. The second way to perform this attack is using dynamic update. Dynamic update is a feature provided by some DNS. If the dynamic update attack is successful, it is even worse than before, because cached entry will be authoritative for the domain and can be cached by other DNS. Some tools to perform this kind of attack are RDMIDBAC or Zodiac. To block this kind of attack, we can use DNS with random transaction ID generation, but recently I've seen a birthday attack to fool some of these DNS transaction ID generation. We can use DNSSEC to allow digital signature of each reply. An invalid countermeasure for dynamic update is to restrict this feature to a range of IP because the protocol used for dynamic update is UDP, and so we can easily spoof those packets.
Let's see another easy attack that
we can perform once we have control over a router somewhere in the internet. If we encounter a router, we can easily set up a tunnel using, for example, GRE from the router to the attack. The fake host is used to avoid protocol unreachable when GRE packets are read to the kernel. So we can set up specific route map on the router, and when packets from the client arrives to the router will forward those packets to the attacker. Now the attacker can see the packet, modify the packet, and using the same tunnel can send back the packet to the router. Using a different route map, the router will forward the packet to the server. This way we can act in the middle, and we are invisible also to trace route, because the TTL field is decremented only on the path between client, router, and server. From router to the attacker, there is the other TTL of the encapsulation protocol. Two tools to perform this kind of attack are EtherCAP with Zaradan plugin or TunnelX published on track. Obviously, to block this kind of attack, we have to prevent unauthorized access to the router using a strong password and community, or fixing bugs if there are any. Let's see how route mapping can be used in a remote scenario. First of all, to use route mapping in a remote scenario, the attacker has to collect sensitive information using, for example, traceroute to have a map of the network, using post-scanning and proto-scanning to know which dynamic routing protocol run in the scenario. This kind of attack is very difficult against link state protocols if the scenario is totally remote. Much easier if the protocol are of the kind of the type of distance vector. Let's see a simple scheme. This is the attacker. The attacker is directly connected to the router R2. The critical node is R1, and we want to intercept traffic between A and B using distance vector protocol. The attacker can easily send packets, forged packets to R2, pretending to be a new router directly connected to B with a good metric for B. When the information reaches R2, R2 will forward this information till it reaches R1. When the information reaches R1, R1 is convinced that the best path to reach B is the one that passes through R2 and to the attacker. In this other scenario, the attacker is more far away from the critical node. So even if he announces itself as a router directly connected to B, when the information reaches R1, the best path will be still the one that passes through R3. So the attacker has to send several spoofed packets to each router on the path, pretending to be the router immediately before, announcing good metrics for B. The attacker can also send spoofed packets pretending to be R3, announcing bad metrics for B. But this is only possible if R1 doesn't support anti-spoofing feature, because those updates will count by the right interface, but those will count by the wrong interface. Let's see, this is the last scenario, where the two victims are in a different autonomous system than the attacker, are not in the same autonomous system as the attacker. So the attacker has to deal with probably different
dynamic routing protocol. For example, in the attacker's autonomous system, we run an interrogate routing protocol, for example, RIP or EIGRP and so on. And for example, in the backbone, we run BGP. As Steven Dugan said yesterday, we can try to attack directly BGP, but it's quite hard to do. An easiest way to attack, this kind of scenario is using the directly interior routing protocol. For example, in this case, a very weaker one, we can feed our border gateway with fake routes using the interior gateway routing protocol. If the border gateway is configured to redistribute routes gained from the interior routing protocol to the BGP world, in this case we have a good chance to inject fake routes even in the BGP world and to catch some packets, some probably, from the two victims. Two tools to perform this kind of attack is IRPAS by Fenelit or Nemesis. Obviously, valid countermeasures are the use of routing protocol authentications or the use of smarter routing protocol, as we have seen yesterday, just like SBGP and so on. Those attacks can be also mixed together to increase their power. For example, route mangling and traffic tunneling, or horse stealing and DNS poisoning, as we want. To summarize, the security of a connection relies on three factors. First of all, a proper configuration of the client, to avoid, for example, ICMP redirection attack, card poisoning, and so on. The other endpoint infrastructure, to avoid, for example, dynamic update attack. And the strongness of the third-party appliances on which we don't have access. For example, our service provider. We have to trust them. And this way, we can be sure that tunneling attack or route mangling attack can be done. The best to protect our communication is the correct and cautious use of cryptographic suites. I said correct because, as we have seen before, an unconscious use is useful, unuseful, for example, for SSH or HTTPS and so on. We can use cryptographic suites on both client and server, at network layer, for example, using IPsec, at transport layer using, for example, SSL, or at application layer using PGP, for example. We are the same as before. Is there any question? If so, please speak very slowly because our English understanding is very low. No questions?